Larry Baldassaro interviewing Ron Santo. July 9, 1998, Milwaukee County Stadium.
Chicago, being Italian, was unbelievable. I mean, it was like, I used to think that when I signed with the Cubs, I just remember watching the Cubs on TV on the game of the week, you know, like Saturdays of the National League, Sundays American League, and I very seldom watched Sundays. I used to watch Yankees. I mean, I was kind of a Yankee fan as a kid. But the Cubs weren't on that much, but when they were, there was something about Chicago, about Wrigley Field that I loved. And a friend of mine, a kid, lived in my neighborhood. I was very short. I was like 5'2", my first year in high school. This kid was the same size. He moved to Chicago for 3 years. He came back, and he was a foot taller than me. So I would think with somebody out of Chicago, you know, they could grow taller in Chicago. It's funny how I think I remember these things. And, Larry, how fast? I grew up in Seattle, Washington. And my father was born in Italy, and my mother was born in Sweden.
Oh, okay.
And so I'm half Swedish, half Italian, and all American.
You know where in Italy?
Yeah, he was born in Foggia.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I've been there.
Have you?
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't been there. You know,
I've been to Italy?
I've never been to Italy. And we're going to go. We're going to go. And but I've never been there. I don't know what it is. I never enjoyed. I've been to Europe once, been to Germany once, and, you know, I've been in Rome, but never stayed long. You know, I mean, I just right there now. So we're thinking definitely going to Italy and spend some time.
As you were growing up, well, I guess in retrospect, do you think of yourself as an Italian-American ball player?
Yeah, absolutely. Very definitely. My mother, even though she was Swedish, she could speak Italian with my dad, but my dad left so early in my life that they never talked with my sister and myself in Italian. And I wish they had, because that's what I was getting to, that going into Chicago and being Italian, being raised, because Tuesday, Thursday, Sunday, it was spaghetti and gravy, and, you know, I mean, we were definitely an Italian family. Raised, you know, Christmas, linguine and calamari, you know, just tuna fish on bread on Fridays, you know, because Catholic.
Right, yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
Now, do you ever think of yourself as being part of a tradition of Italian-American ball players? Or when you were a kid, did you think of ball players as being Italian?
Well, I knew, you know, Joe DiMaggio was one of my favorites because he was Italian, so yes, I would say that. I don't think I thought of it, but I guess when I got to the big leagues, and I got there so quickly, you know, I was just 20 years old, you know, 1 year minor league ball, and I was in the big leagues when I was only 16 major league teams, you know, 8 in the National League and 8 in the American League, and I was in awe, so I was just trying to stay, and you know, a lot of the things that when you get to big leagues that early in life, all you're concerned is going across those white lines and getting the job done so that you stay. And I have to say, though, that after my first year, I felt deep that God had given me a special talent. Baseball was easy to me. It was not a difficult sport. I loved it. The only thing that happened with me is that I contracted diabetes at the age of 18, and, you know, I still wonder today, I wrote a book of my life, but it was more of an inspirational book, you know,
mm-hmm.
Diabetes, of growing up with diabetes, and but, you know, it was my life, it was from love of Ivy, and when I finished that book, it's the first time I ever thought about this. I said, the numbers I put up with this devastating disease, when I say that, I had to take a shot every day. I had to worry about my sugars dropping. I had symptoms, you know. But I mean, you got to I got to believe I was out there playing ball so many times with my sugar being at a level where I was thinking I was functioning with all my faculties, but I probably wasn't. You know what I'm saying? Because anybody that's a diabetic can understand. In fact, all diabetics say to me, how did you ever do it? With insulin, you know, because I had to regulate my insulin. I had to protect myself, but my sugar could drop, you know. And I was amazed. I still didn't believe that my career was short to be husband. I mean, I retired at age 34 after 15 years in the big league. But I didn't think it as something. But after doing the book and after realizing, I wonder what kind of numbers I could have put up. What I said, and to me, I put up, you know, good numbers. I mean, and I was a consistent ball player. But it was easy to. It wasn't a. The one thing I did is I knew I had the ability, and it's what you make of your ability. And a lot of players come up, I see, come and go. They got all the business in the world, but they don't have it here. Right? And if you don't have it there, that's not going to carry out. You know, I always, in radio booth, I don't know if you hear me, but I talk about the Gas House game. DeRio came with it, and he used to talk about the players, and he would explain that they didn't have this natural talent that a lot of us had, but they had a will. There was a way they went out there, they went across the white lines, nobody was their friend, and they knew how to win. They brought out their ability. Like Pete Rose, when I saw him come up.
That's the name that comes to mind. That,
absolutely. Yeah, I never thought of him, but made himself a player. Glenn Beckert, another one, my second baseman. I mean, there's so many. And when you look at the Morandinis and the Crux and the Daltons, when they were all on one team in the Mulholland, I mean, those guys, they got that Gas House game type of personality, which I love. Give me 80 of those guys and you'll win.
So when you first came up, did other players address you as Italian? Did they?
Oh, yeah. In fact, my nickname was Dave.
Oh, it was?
Yes. That was my nickname. Even to this day, you run into Fergie or Billy or, I mean, you know, they all call me Dave.
Huh.
Finally.
Anybody in particular give that to you initially?
I think because I have that Italian personality. You know, I have a quick temper. I carried my emotions on my sleeves. But when the game was over, and nobody was my friend when I walked across the white lines, but when the game was over, even the fans couldn't relate because they thought the way I played the game is the way I was off the field. And I was completely different. I had a lot of compassion for people. Even though I got upset quickly and I might have reacted, I forgave. That's right. And when I realized I was wrong, if I was wrong, I would apologize.
Did you ever get any kind of ethnic slurs aimed at you as
no.
an Italian?
No.
Fans,
no.
Players, nobody?
No.
Do you remember any particular Italian players, either on Cubs or other teams?
Carmen Fanzone. Carmen was Italian all the way through. Played the trumpet. He was a backup third baseman, a utility player.
Did you relate to each other as Italians? I mean, did you call each other paisan or anything like that?
No. No. I don't recall doing. I have friends at home that I do, like Ponarelli at my club, and friends, my Italian friends I call, you know, the Dake. I give them, hey, Dake, you know, and paisan.
You know, but obviously, if your teammates were calling you that, they identified.
They identified me definitely. Oh yeah, they're the ones who gave me that.
Yeah, and that didn't offend you.
No. Oh no. I have to say, to me, Dago or Watt really offended me.
Mm-hmm.
Watt offended me. There is it's just the sound.
Yeah.
But Dago and you know. Like, it's done in a friendly way. Like, hey, Dago.
Yeah.
Friendly. It's not a.
That was
not a malicious.
Used, a lot with the Yankees. I mean, they called DiMaggio the Big Dig.
Yeah.
And because I talked to Phil Rizzuto, and I thought, well, Dominic DiMaggio, and a lot of them say people didn't really use those terms in a nasty way.
No.
It wasn't mean-spirited.
Never malicious.
But there was a distinction between Dago and love.
Maybe a couple of my teammates might have one night, you know, might have said WAP in a friendly way, but I did say, you know, in a friendly way, I don't really like WAP. I don't know. There was something to it. Even though, you know, I didn't have any racial slurs, I mean, in a sense, but I didn't like that.
Do you think there's less sense of ethnic identity among young golf players today than there was in your generation?
Yeah,
right.
Feel
down, let's do that thing, and then we'll go eat. Right. Want to come back up here, Morgan?
Yeah, where do you want me to meet you?
Back up here. Or if you want to come on down the field.
What's closer?
Either way.
Okay. I'll be on the field.
Okay, I'll be right over here in front of the Brewers dugout for a TV
show. That's where you'll be. I don't know if I can go over there right now. You know what I mean? Before the game, right?
Yes, you can.
Yeah, oh, very, very definitely.
Yeah, I don't think today.
There wasn't the racial problem. I didn't feel it in baseball. I mean, Willie Williams and I came up together. I'll never forget meeting Billy Williams, just out of high school, and they had a three-week rookie camp, all the best talent. And went down there and spent 3 weeks. Roger Hornsby was our batting instructor, which was unbelievable. And believe it or not, I wrote this in my book, but after the 3 weeks, he put everybody on a picnic bench, you know. It was like in bleacher bench, you know. And we had 30 guys, and they started down below. And there was one black player that was there, and I think Billy was the only other black player of those 30 guys. And Billy and I became friends right away. I don't know if it was because it was very obvious. He had been in the minor league for 3 years, but it was very obvious I could see this talent, you know. Plus, he was very friendly and very nice, and we just kind of hit it off. Well, at the end of the 3 weeks, he stood in front of Roger Hornsby, and he went down the front row, and he was this way. And Billy and I are in the second row, sitting next to each other. And Billy was first, and then me. So he went down the row like this, and he said to the black guy, "You might as well go back home. The best you'll do is you'll probably be shining shoes." You know, I mean, this was in 1959. And he said, "You'll probably be shining shoes somewhere because you won't get by A ball." And that whole row wasn't by double A ball. And then that's when he had 20 teams, you know what I mean? A minor league team. Now he goes up. Now I'm starting to sweat. Because if he tells me this, I just can't break your heart. Kill me. And he gets to Billy and he tells the kid to his left, make a long story short, he gets to Billy and says, "You can hit the big leagues right now." And now he comes to me and he goes, "And you can hit the big leagues."
Wow.
Of all those guys, he picked a pitcher out that would make the rest of it.
And he was right.
And he was right. Not one of...
What was he like as a hitting coach?
He was great.
Yeah.
The reason he was great, because... I don't know. You know, it's like you have a hitting style that brings you there. You know what I mean? This is the first time in pro ball. But, you know, I could hit. I mean, I just knew. I mean, what I did in high school, I knew I was above. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
You didn't know if you're going to make it, because my dad told me, my stepfather told me, since when you go there, you're going to find out there's as many players there as good as you, and you're going to want to go home because you're going to be homesick. Oh, he told me. And by God, he was right. But the only thing Roger ever told me is I used to be up on the plate even with the plate. Not close, but even. He said, "All I recommend to you, Ron, is you get back in the back." He said, "You'll see the curveball better. You'll have a little more time for that fastball." And he said, "Other than that, that's it. No mechanics, no nothing. talked about Stride. All he ever talked about, Billy and I. And he told Billy, he moved Billy slightly up, even. Billy was a little bad. He moved him up, left-handed hitter. He says, you'll catch that slider better. That's all he did. And then he talked about Stride. The shorter the stride, the quicker the bat. And evidently, we have short stride. You know, I didn't, you know at the time, but you know, when I took a pitch, I knew when I was hitting, take a pitch, I'm right here. I'm not out here. You know what I'm saying? And pitchers could see that. I wasn't fooled or Billy. So that, and he was a minor league hitting instructor. So first year, I ended up hitting 327, and I think I drove in, I think I drove in 94 runs. I didn't think, only 11 homers, I consider myself a home run.
Where were you on the minor?
Double A. I went right to Double A, San Antonio, Texas. So that spring, I'm invited to spring training as a non-roster, along with Billy Williams. And he was there, Roger, in spring training. And that's all we ever looked at. And that's all Billy and I did after Roger. We watched each other. Like, Billy be hitting in front of me. He hit third, I hit fourth. And all I'd watch when he was, not in slump. He didn't go in a lot of slump. But when he was getting in one, that's the one thing we looked at. Then we would go take hitting. And we would put a bat, Roger showed us, right there, so that if you stepped on the bat, you would break your ankle. I mean, but you can't just do that to everybody, because there's a tendency to move, but that kind of used our hands only. He was tremendous.
He must have been fairly old, but
yes. He, Roger had to be in his 60s. But can you imagine Roger Hornstein? I mean, I was in awe.
Of course.
And then Leo DeRosa. And when DeRosa took over, I was in awe.
Really?
Yeah.
This is from my hometown.
Yeah,
West Springfield, Mass.
God, I wish he would. He deserved to be in all of it. He's in, but he deserved it when he was alive.
Well, of course, that brings up the question of, is that a ticklish question?
You know, here's how I feel about it. I feel that this was my last year, but I got the Veterans Committee, and I really feel sure I wanted to get in. I wanted to get in. What was more upsetting to me than anything else, Larry, when I became eligible 5 years, now I got out of the game, I went into business. When I became eligible 5 years after I retired, you know, I went right into this. I didn't stay in baseball. They wanted me to stay in baseball. I said, no, I'm going to, because I had a business. I was making as much money in those areas off the field as I was on it.
In Chicago?
Yeah. So I was a vice president of an oil company. Yeah. And so I retired on my own. I still had a couple of years left, but not physically, but not mentally. Mm-hmm. When we didn't win in 69 and 70 and 71, I mean, it really took a lot out of me. And then when I got traded to Sox thinking that was going to be a good move, it was a horrible move.
Yeah.
It was a wrong move. And, but now I'm retired. I'm vice president, then I start my own business and became very successful.
A different business?
Yeah, I left that oil company and started my own. Same residual fuel. Bought the Gulf Coast, brought it up by barge, and was very successful with three other partners. They bought me out in 81, and then I bought a company called Interpoint, truck stops throughout the United States. And then the Cubs, at the age of 47, called me and said, would you be interested in doing color? I said, I don't know, myself to broadcast it. And so I said to my wife, and I said, honey, let's see, I 89, I threw out the first ball in the playoff. Never had that feeling. Never had that kind of feeling when I said, damn, I'd love to be part of this team when it does win. Not as a coach, not as a manager. I wasn't thinking what. But then the next year, the 90, so I gave it a shot. And get back, fell in love with it. And that's the only reason that I got into the game, and I sold my business. And now I'm doing something I love doing. And with divisional play, I feel like I'm going to be up to it when they do it. I mean, we're having a pretty good year this year. Oh, yeah, my fingers crossed. Oh. But where was I getting? Leo?
Yeah, we're talking about Leo DeRocher.
Yeah.
You were in awe of him.
And then when he came in 66, it was, I mean, when he came in that clubhouse. Now, I was up in 60, and I was 6 years. We were second division ball club. But when he came in, I don't know what it was like. I just remember going on the field and all of a sudden having respect from other teams because DeRocher was.
Really?
Yeah. And then we, 66, he said, we're not an eighth place team. We ended up 10th. But the next year, we ended up 3rd. Then that's when Kessinger, Vector, and of course, Billy and Ernie were together, and Ed Fergie, and Ham, Holtzman, and Andy Hunley, you know, all
the other team.
Oh, shit. Right,
three Hall of Famers.
But getting, you know, and then getting back, so anyway, I'm saying, I didn't get 5% of the vote when I became eligible. That's 4%, so I don't even get on the ballot.
Yeah.
I was devastated. Now, I usually speak up. I tell you what I did. I went to church. I stopped in church, and I couldn't believe it that I didn't get with my numbers. And I saw guys that got on the ballot. I didn't say a word. 5 years later, I get a letter reinstating me, apologizing. So I missed 10 years. Do you understand? So those writers that were around
knew you
were gone.
Yeah.
But even the ones that knew me, I didn't get fired for them. How the hell did that happen? And so that right away, I figured it was going to be tough. And then when all of a sudden they stopped putting two in, just one, I just kept getting further back, and my time was getting closer. I really felt I had a chance this past year.
Yeah, a lot of people do.
And but I got to wait the year 2001, and then I become eligible, and those are my peers.
Well, if you look at your numbers, I mean, you compare them to other third base.
There's only 9 third basemen, Larry, in the Hall of Fame. There's only 2 of better numbers than that, and that's Eddie Matthews and Mike
Schmidt. I did a story on Paul Molitor his last year here, and the story in effect was, if he had not been injured, what might his numbers have been like? And I compared him at that time to the third baseman in the Hall of Fame, because that's where he had played most in the field. And even then, you know, in 92, his numbers were like third and fourth.
Yeah.
So you know what he's up to now.
Yeah, I mean,
it doesn't make sense.
No.
So you never, did it ever even cross your mind that there was any ethnic prejudice involved in that type of stuff?
No, it did not. I guess it had more so, you know, only 9 third basemen in the Hall of Fame. Up 8 of them until Schmidt got in. The only thing I thought about, and I don't know, was, you know, I spoke my mind. You know, after a game was over, you know, those runners came in and both sides, and it wasn't a time to get me sometimes. You know, I was, you know, I don't think I ever insulted anybody, but maybe they didn't like, I don't know. Anyway, I don't think I did anything, you know. So, I'm not sure what it is. Three guys getting the Hall of Fame, the same team, and not winning.
How you doing?
Good. Thank you. Yeah. The radio, did you drop?
Yeah.
So, I never thought of that. Yeah. I never, ever thought of, you know, any racial thing with Italian. I mean, I was so proud to be one. Like when I got to Chicago, I thought bodies fell out of closets, you know, with Al Capone, because I'd never been here before, you know what I mean? And I get there, and what do you think? I don't know if you want to write this, you can. But all of a sudden, you know, day ball, Wrigley Field. So I'm coming out of the ballpark. I'm coming down from our clubhouse. And I'm walking down with Ernie Banks, and one of the ushers come up to me and said, there's a gentleman down in the box seats who wants to say hello to you. I said, okay. So, in those days, we were very friendly. I mean, we related to the fans, and we communicated. So I walk over, and he said, two big guys were sitting with him, and they were Italian. Well, this guy says, oh, Sam Giancana. Hi, Sam. And of course, knowing, who Sam Giancana, because when I came here, I had an Italian family that I became very close with in Elmwood Park, where I live, which is an Italian neighborhood, and the Matarises. And Joe knew Pelusi's and everybody, and he used to talk about Sam, and we should go to this Italian restaurant, and Sam would always be in there with the sisters, And what was your name? The singing sisters?
Oh, the McGuire.
McGuire sisters.
Naughty.
And so I knew, so shook his hand, and he came to 5 ball games. Every time he came to a ball game, he would sit there and he'd yell to me, hey, Ryan. So, hi. Every time I hit a home run, 5 times. So he invites me over to his house for dinner. I go over to his house for dinner. They find out. The commissioner's office. I had to go. But I was just, and all they said to me, the question, Bowie Kuhn brought me up. He never asked me about the Cubbies or anybody. Just friends. Just, well, you can't associate. So I had to go back to him and tell him. That was tough. But, he understood.
So what did he serve you for dinner?
Oh, he made his own spaghetti gravy.
Oh, all right.
Excellent. Oh, yeah. He was a cook. And they had the wine like my grandfather, homemade wine. They had the Muscatel, the white wine. Yeah. Oh, God. It was a
nice house.
Yeah. Well, it was an old house in Elmwood Park. Old house. And he had a basement like all houses. Small. That's what we ate. But and that's why I wish, because every Italian that came up would speak Italian to me. I wish.
Enemy territory.
Yes.
So, but you couldn't speak Italian. But
my father left Lee and my sister. When my mother and father got divorced, he was an alcoholic and abusive man.
Your dad?
Yeah. My stepfather was a wonderful man. He was a wonderful man. My dad, yeah.
I don't know if it's interesting, it's curious, because Harry Carey's father, you must know this story too, according to his book anyway, was an alcoholic and loved him badly very early.
Yes.
Billy Martin's father. Actually, his mother never wanted to marry his father.
Yeah.
And they broke up after a few months. It's tough.
Yeah. I was 4 years old. I remember vividly. And I remember vividly, he'd come home. He owned a couple taverns. He'd be drunk. He was a mean drunk. And he'd be pounding the walls. My mother's Swedish, a tough lady. And she'd always, I'd jump on his back. I'll never forget that. And then I'll never forget the day that he never came in. I could finally sleep through the night. But I would only wait for him to come home. Didn't know if he'd be drunk or if he wouldn't be drunk, So he left when I was 6 years old. He left my sister and I. My mother got divorced. He'd pick us on the weekends, 3 weekends in a row. Then he didn't show up. Didn't see him till he was 19. And we played an exhibition game. And the Pima, Washington. I walk in this minor league clubhouse. I'm 20 years old. And there he was. I recognize him. Big rim hat. And I grabbed him and I walked him outside and I told him, that's your effort. I'll pay you to go. Anyway, never saw him until because he died 78 years old. My uncle called from Seattle, and he said, your dad's dying. He said, would you come in? I said, I don't want to come in. Anyway, and my wife talked me into it, and we went.
He did go. So did you see him before he died?
Saw him before he died, and I asked him the question, "Well, why did you leave him?" And he said that I was an alcoholic. I loved your mother, but I couldn't help myself.
And yet, in spite of that, you didn't sort of deny your background as an Italian.
No, no. My cousins, and uncles, wonderful family, wonderful.
So you had an extended family.
Then Constantino came to life. My stepfather, at the age of 9,
was he Italian?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes. And I called me dad a year later.
What was his name?
John Constantino.
Oh, is his last name?
Yeah, and I loved him. He was the reason, he was the one that told me, you know, you go down there, you're going to find out. He never, he'd always come out and watch me, never criticize me, never say, you know, he was wonderful. He was very strict. I mean, he took over. We were used to getting over a lot of stuff, couldn't. My sister never took to him. I fell in love with him. And he's a wonderful man. He took very good care of my mother. And they were killed coming down to see me in spring training, Harlem. So, 1973. He took a long time. You took a very long time.
You did not shut me up, Pat.
But you guys are still going, so it's barely
worth it. Well, I don't know. I don't want to keep
him. Reviewing Ron Santo, June 15th, 1999, Milwaukee.
Last year, you were telling me that your dad was born in Foggia. Foggia, yeah. How did he, or how did the family end up in Seattle?
You know, I don't know, because my dad came over when he was, I think, around 16, and my mother came over from Sweden when she was 12 or so, and they met in the States. Mm-hmm. So I really don't know.
Mm-hmm. And what did your dad do?
My dad, at the beginning, owned a couple, I remember as a kid, a couple bars, and he was a heavy drinker, alcoholic. In fact, he left us when I was 6 years old. And then he became, I guess, in the time that I didn't see him from the time I was 6 to 19, and I think during that time he was a merchant marine, traveled around the world.
Hi, Cap. When did you first start thinking about playing ball professionally?
I would say high school. I mean, I always had aspirations of baseball was my first love, although I played football and basketball. And I had a couple scholarships in football, and at that time, you know, 6 foot quarterback that could throw, they were looking for. And, but I think high school was really when I just remember sitting down with a friend of mine, and we talked about what he was going to do. And I said, well, I'm gonna try to go into professional baseball early, right out of high school, if they'll be interested. And then I'll give it 4 years. If I did make it, I'd go to college. But I made it in a year. So.
You signed out of high school?
I signed out of high school.
You went to San Antonio?
Directly to San Antonio, double-A ball. In those days, that was big. I stayed with the big league club my first year in spring training, non-roster, 18 years old. And then I went to the minors. To the minor league spring training camp the last week, and then they started me in double-A ball. I didn't get off to a good start, and then they were going to send me
down, but I had told Grady Hatton, I said, you know, give me another week. I said, I know I could play here. I said, and he did. And I think
he had a bit of a wild arm in those days, I've read. A little bit of a wild arm.
I had a very wild arm. I had a great arm, but I used to challenge. It wasn't as much, when you say wild, it was more to the fact that I knew I had a great arm, so I let a runner get down there and then fire it. And I had a lot of young kids in San Antonio Mission Stadium sitting behind the first baseman because he got a lot of balls up there. And Grady helped me on that. You know, he taught me. I was a young kid, and he was teaching me, you know, you got more time. And I knew I did, but it was like showing off instead of just letting it go. And I think my first year I might have made 35 errors or something like that.
But you spent only 1 year in San Antonio?
Yeah.
And then went right to the Cubs.
What happened was the end of the San Antonio year, we didn't win, but the AAA team did. And then I was brought up to play in the playoffs that year.
Okay.
And then that winter, I got married. And then I was in Palm Springs for my honeymoon, and I got a call from my mother and said that the Chicago Cubs called and have invited you to spring training as a non-roster player at the age of 19, you know, and so my second year. And so I was very excited. In fact, I cut my honeymoon short just to get home and get set. And
that was then 1960, you went to the Cubs. And you only played 65 games your first year with the Cubs.
What happened was that particular spring, I had a very good spring. Charlie Grimm was the manager, and Charlie had told me the last week, he said, you know, I know you're a non-rush, but he said, there was like Frank Thomas and Sammy Drake and Harry Bright, and Frank Thomas, Harry Bright, all fighting for that position, you know, because Alvin Dark had retired.
Mm-hmm.
And I went, I was playing the best of any of them, and I was having a good spring, and then Charlie brought me in. He says, the Dodgers are coming in, and if you have a good weekend, you'll break with the club. And I faced Drysdale. I went 2-for-4 off Drysdale with a home run. And then Stan Williams pitched next day, and I went 2-for-4 with a double single. And so when the game was over the weekend, he said, you'll break with the club, you know. So I went back to the hotel, and John Holland called me, and I thought I was going down to Charlie Grimm's room to sign a special, you know, sign the league contract. Little did I know, when I got there, I walked in the room and I saw Charlie Grimm and John Holland, general manager. And you know how you walk in a room, you know something's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And they just made a trade. They gave up Ron Paranowski, Johnny Gorrell, $25,000 for Don Zimmer. And I didn't know that at the time, but I knew something was wrong. And I said, he said, sit down, son. I said, no, something's wrong. What's wrong, you know? And they told me, and I didn't, you know, I was so emotional. I didn't want to cry there. So I said, I quit. You promised me, Charlie, that I'd make the big leagues. You promised me. You lied to me. And I walked out the door, and I went to my room. I called my wife up about 2 months, and I said, I just quit. I'm coming home. I was packing, and the door, knocking on the door, and it was John Holland. And John, I opened the door, and I walked back, and I kept packing, and I had tears in my eyes, and he says, you can't quit. He says, you're so talented. You'll be back here in the big leagues before you know it. And I said to John, I said, I know I can play right now. And he lied to me, and I'm going home. And then John kind of come back and kind of said, you know, talking to me and saying, you'll be up before the end of the season, for sure. And I'm not talking September, you know. And said, go down to AAA and have a good year or get off to a good start. So he convinced me. I went down and didn't have a good start. I was really upset. And then I heard he was coming down. The club was doing horseshit. I mean, they were terrible. And they were in a 9-game losing streak. And June 25th. I was saying to my wife, they're not playing that well. I heard John was down here watching, and I had a real good week. And so he went back, and then June 26th, I got a call in the morning to be on a plane, and I got there and played against Pittsburgh Pirates. Went 4-for-7 with 5 RBIs. We won a double hitter.
Now, you remember Tony Ruggieri.
Yeah.
In the Hall of Fame. It took him a long time, but he always played in the shadow of Ruth and Gary. And in effect, did you feel like he played in the shadow of Banks and Williams?
No, definitely not.
Oh.
Shit.
I mean, in terms of public perception, not your ability.
No, not at all. Not at all. I mean, not at all. I put up numbers. My numbers, in my opinion, at that particular time, there was only 7 third basemen when I became eligible in 15 years, and I don't know what happened. I don't have an answer for it. All I know is that that's all they talked about when I was getting out of baseball, the Hall of Fame.
Bill James.
Then the first year I became out, I didn't get 5% of the vote. I was out of the game 10 years. And so that had nothing to do with shadows at all. I was an impact player. I put up big numbers. I played with diabetes. I'm in diabetic. I mean, there's a lot of times I was out there. There was players. I was the only player in baseball that ever played a position player. There was another pitcher, and that was Bill Gullickson, that came up when he was 20 years old. Catfish Hunter caught diabetes, unfortunately, worse than that, you know, at the age of 33. But, you know, nobody knows what it's like to take insulin every day, go out there, bust your ass, have reactions, didn't have a glucometer in those days. That was a lot of stuff.
But, I mean, you, in spite of that, you were an Iron Man. I mean, you missed, what, 23 games?
That's 10 years.
That's incredible.
And the only reason I missed, I got hit in the face with a pitch and busted my cheekbone. I had to go and get operated. I was only gone a week.
Yeah.
Now, I get very bitter when that bullshit about shadow shit. I was a nobody's shadow.
That question was meant in terms of public perception, obviously not the numbers you put up.
No, but you know, I mean, Billy, Ernie, Fergie made the Hall of Fame. I did, that's all.
You mentioned that last year that your mother spoke Italian.
Yeah.
How did she learn it?
She learned through my dad. Yeah. Because, see, my mother didn't come over with a lot of relatives. My dad did.
Mm-hmm.
So I think my mother, I mean, she spoke Swedish, but I think during the time they met, she must have
learned it up from him.
Yeah. Or maybe she just spoke another language also, you know, other than Swedish and English.
Very common in Europe.
Yeah.
Anything else I should be asking you that I haven't?
I've been very, in my opinion, lucky where I came from, you know, Garlic Gulch in Seattle, an Italian neighborhood I was raised in.
You were an Italian neighborhood, and did you say it was Garlic?
Garlic Gulch.
Is that what they called the area? Right.
They called the area.
Right in Seattle.
Rainier Valley, yeah.
Garlic Gulch. I didn't realize there were that many Italians in Seattle.
Oh, yes.
Really?
Oh, yes. And especially where I was raised was an Italian neighborhood.
I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah. And I was very proud of that. And I never expected to be where I am today or to be in the big leagues because of, I think being Italian had a lot to do with that. And fighting, where I had to, you know, I didn't have a father. I was not raised until I was, you know, about 12 years old. And then my stepfather, John Constantino, who was Italian, came into my life, and he had a lot to do with the reason I'm in the big leagues. And so
he was still in Seattle.
Oh, yeah.
Dad, I ever lived in Seattle.
Yeah. Wonderful man. They called him Dad. I don't know. You know, I think I was a very fortunate person.
I think so.
But to achieve what you've done, I mean, you've overcome a lot.
Yeah. I've overcome a lot of adversity. A lot. Believe me.
18 years ago, which makes you appreciate what you accomplished.
Exactly. And I was lucky that when my real father left, another father came into my life. I was very fortunate there. Or I don't know how the outcome
will
be.
Barry Morris will be on with
you. So.
Hey, man.
Yeah,
thank you. I feel good to see.
Well, if there's anything else you want to add.
No,